Yo, what's up, what's up, what's up? I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela. Welcome to In The Thick. It's ITT Sound Off. It's Friday. Hello.
Yeah, it's another one of those Fridays like, oh, what the hell just happened? We're going to talk about what the hell just happened. And I'm glad that I'm in an upbeat mood right now, Julio.
Nice.
So the vice presidential debates happened Wednesday night. Senator Kamala Harris, Vice President Mike Pence.
Okay, let's move on with the flight.
And flies don't stay on somebody's head for 2 minutes, but next. Okay, so they took the stage and then...
Right.
Well, people are calling her the moderator.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure. She's the current Washington bureau chief for USA Today. And, you know, I don't have anything against Susan Page, but no. I mean, you all did a beautiful job, Team ITT, with their live tweeting. Love you guys. You all were just like, boom, 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 boom. The only thing I tweeted out was I was getting sick of her saying, thank you, Mr. Vice President. Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Thank you. And he's like, he's interrupting you. He's speaking over you. You're a woman. He's speaking over Kamala. She's a woman.
I feel you on that.
I wanted more from Kamala. I was like, yeah, come on. And then I realized, oh, she can't be the angry black woman. She's got to be, you know, everybody's going to be expecting her to be presidential, whereas the president can get up there and act like a bully, period.
Right, right.
One thing that did happen is that every single woman can absolutely identify when Kamala says, I'm speaking.
Yeah.
And this man is speaking over her. And she is saying, I am speaking. I mean.
And I think in the end, if you take a conclusion, both of them did their jobs.
Well, what do you mean?
Which was to just be like, you are propping up your running mate, right? You know what I mean? I don't think it moved the needle. You know, I think Kamala did what she needed to do. And I love the facial expressions. I was watching it with my wife, Sheila, and Sheila's like, she reminds me of me. And I'm like, yeah, that's why I like you both.
The slow side eyes.
Oh, I'm like, I know that look. I think it really did speak to how women are held to a different standard. But there were also many times that neither of the candidates answered the question.
Correct.
And it prompted all these Twitter callouts for different moderators. Just want to share a clip from what our friend, the fabulous Joanne Reed from MSNBC, said following the debate.
He repeatedly interrupted her. He demanded, well, he also repeatedly interrupted the other woman in the room, which is the moderator, who seemed to at some point lose control of him. And he also continually demanded that Kamala Harris answer his questions. She wasn't there to answer his questions. She was not there to do whatever it is that Mike Pence told her to do. She was there to talk to the American people and answer Susan Page's questions. And she continually would look at him when he would do that and say, I'm talking, and
she would
give, I'm speaking, and give that look that everybody with a black mom recognizes was usually the prelude to a problem.
This is the other thing I shared that night, and I texted it to you as well, because why are we surprised that I have to say this, that not one question about immigration.
Immigrants, you know, they're just a bunch of the I word. That's how they, so we don't really matter. What's happening to our bodies or our children do not matter.
Right. And this is about the administration's policy, family separation. And the reason I raised this one, because it was this week, news came out about how former Attorney General Jeff Sessions deliberately pushed for children to be taken away under Trump's zero tolerance policy. You know, Jacob Soboroff, when he came on our show, called it torture. And you would think a question like that in the news would have been asked. And I think it comes to the fact that you have a moderator. And this is nothing against Susan Page. She's a very accomplished woman journalist, but...
I'm sorry. No. Iske is as a professional journalist to journalist. I've been talking a lot because it is Hispanic Heritage Month. And so there's all of these questions about it, right? And so people are asking about allyship. So I have a problem with Susan Page in that she needed to be a better journalist.
I agree.
Yeah.
Our producer, Nicole, found a tweet.
So this is from Brittany Johnstone. It says, a lot of white women this morning think that they're Senator Harris in the situation we saw last night, when actually we're Susan Page. So this is towards white women, right?
Ooh.
She says, failing to hold white men accountable for their actions and failing to use what little institutional power and privilege we have to level the playing field.
Wow.
That's what I'm talking about, Julio.
Boom.
So I have spoken a lot about being a journalist of color and of conscience, and I have said a lot, you do not have to be a journalist of color to be a journalist of conscience.
I'm with you there.
I mean, it was also like historic.
Yeah.
What an amazing moment to have a woman who is, you know, in her prime, that she is a black woman, that she is an Indian woman, that she is a woman of immigrant parents, that she's on that vice presidential debate stage holding her own. So our producer, the fabulous Harsha Nahata, who was just nominated.
Harsha.
She was a finalist at the South Asian Journalists Association for the Race and Diversity Reporting Award for her episode that she did for us here at ITT about Black trans resistance, which, by the way, was beautiful. So congratulations, Harsha.
You go, Harsha.
She spoke with Taheed Chappelle, who's an executive board member for the nation's oldest professional association of journalists of color. He is also with the Free Press's New Voices Project and runs a Journalists of Color Slack channel. So when Biden announced Harris as a VP pick, Taheed posted on Facebook saying that while the DC community can be excited, it's a cool moment, it's also an important time to reflect on anti-blackness within that community. So he spoke to our producer, Harsha Nahata, about what seeing Harris on a national stage means for him as a black and Indian media professional.
We don't see a lot of spotlight just on biracial, multiracial people who make up America and who are growing into a larger population. For me, it's so rare. And I know there's a lot of biracial people. I know there's a lot of people who are multiracial. But to find the intersection of Black and Indian has always been fascinating because, you know, in America, these two communities are not like always connected and aligned together and advocating together and working together. It's cool because it allows me to really look at her history, her upbringing, and kind of look at the similarities and feel a sense of closeness to that as well. To be able to see somebody at the world stage, so to speak, and be able to kind of think about, you know, what has she gone through in her upbringing that has developed her perspective of the world? And kind of what does that mean for me, who has had similar but different upbringings, and how that has influenced my perspective and my views of both Black communities and Indian communities too. So it's always interesting to hear her kind of, you know, name drop her mom or talk about her heritage and her background, because it instills in me a comfort to also talk about both of my histories as well.
Wow.
That perspective right there is so lacking in all of these debates. Just that. Can you imagine a question to Kamala Harris on that? And what would Mike Pence say?
Right.
Our minorities, right? Like he said.
Oh my God.
I know.
Our minorities.
I know.
I would have just said, sir. Excuse me, what did you just say?
Yeah.
And that's why this tweet from Tiffany Liao, which is great. It says, Kamala is the descendant of two auntie lineages. Pence is only so calm because he has no idea WTF this eyebrow raise means.
All right. Well, listen, a lot to talk about. Let's move on to our second topic, which we're calling Trump the super spreader.
The infected White House.
Yeah, I know. Seriously. After testing positive for the coronavirus and spending just a few days at Walter Reed Medical Center, Trump was back in the White House on Monday. Dr. Trump all of a sudden says he doesn't think he's contagious anymore. And his doctor, Sean Conley, he said that Trump could resume public engagements by Saturday. Think about that. He was in Walter Reed Hospital just a week ago. Mm-hmm. Trump has suggested that he might hold a rally then. This is putting everyone at risk from what we know, because, of course, oh, what a surprise. The White House is not being transparent. Mm-hmm. Maria, at least 21 people in Trump's circle have already tested positive. Secret Service agents are expressing frustration.
Yeah.
And also, he's put about 90 non-political White House staff members at risk, you know, like butlers, housekeepers, ushers. They are mostly Black, Latinx, elderly. Their jobs don't change because the president changes. Right. So their lifetime employees.
They're the staff. And you think that they have the possibility to tell any of us that they're testing positive?
Exactly.
When they could lose their jobs, their health care, their whatever. Oh. They're staying quiet.
So then as of Friday morning, next week's second presidential debate is up in the air. Trump has refused to be part of the virtual debate. He's asking it to be moved to have it in person a week later. Biden's like, hey, show up next week or don't show up. And then we'll see at the end of October. What do you think about all this, Maria?
Well, you know, I see this as another step towards authoritarianism. Mm. As much as we, shit on them for the bad job they do. It is a presidential debate commission. There are a series of agreements that you make. Biden is boxed in again.
Yeah.
But I do think that someone in the Biden camp, someone needs to be saying, we want to remind you that if it wasn't the reverse, this is what he would be saying.
That's another world.
My experience with COVID is that you get it and then you don't begin to feel the symptoms until about 7 days later. In my expectation, he should begin to be feeling the symptoms now.
Yeah.
Trump decided to pick up the phone and call his friends at Fox News. And he didn't sound so good.
Well, I want him to vote, but I will say this. Absentee is okay because absentee ballots, absentee ballots are fine.
There was just a medical doctor on MSNBC this morning, Friday morning, who was saying, I treat patients. He has COVID pneumonia. And this is what it sounds like. And we heard it. That phlegm, I know it's disgusting, but it's not hay fever.
I think it's the first time the word phlegm has ever been said on In the Thick in our 4 years. So there we go. There's always a first.
All right, we're going to move on to our final topic, which is ding, 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 white supremacy. At least we talk about it, right? I mean, we've been talking about it for a long time.
When have we not talked about it?
We never stop. And so it is being encouraged and it is manifesting in very scary ways.
Yeah.
I was around in 1995 when Timothy McVeigh blew up the Oklahoma City federal building. And he actually said this to Time magazine in the only interview that he gave. He said, do I look like a terrorist? I don't look like a terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
He was already playing the race card and what a quote unquote terrorist looks like. Just a week ago at the presidential debate, in fact, we all heard when Trump refused to denounce the Proud Boys. In fact, he couldn't even say the words. He was like, well, what do you want me to call them? He said, stand by. That is not stand down.
Yeah.
On Wednesday at the vice presidential debate, Pence denied systemic racism is an issue in this country.
Then the fly showed up like 30 seconds later, just saying.
On Thursday, the FBI announced felony charges against 13 militia members who had drawn up a plan to attack the Michigan State Capitol and kidnap Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Just a reminder that back in April, Trump tweeted in all caps, liberate Michigan, referring to the COVID-19 precautions that the state was taking. Here's Governor Whitmer and what she said at a press conference later that day after the news that she was a target.
When our leaders speak, their words matter. They carry weight. When our leaders meet with, encourage, or fraternize with domestic terrorists, they legitimize their actions, and they are complicit. When they stoke and contribute to hate speech, they are complicit.
So, Julio, as you know, we deeply understand that words matter, which is why there are words that you never hear uttered out of our mouths on this show or in our newsrooms.
Yeah.
We are seeing white supremacy once again,
right?
These acts of violence. And we've been talking about this. I know you and I were just like Mike German.
Yeah, that Mike German show we did after the election in 2016, the former FBI agent.
Go back and find it, people, because we were talking about this.
He basically said, the notion of white supremacy being the biggest domestic terrorist threat, which people are now talking about that, but the FBI, because of it being so white, was kind of just passing it off. There's sort of been an enabling of white supremacy throughout the history of the country. And can we just stop calling them militia members?
That's it.
And then there was this tweet by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and this is what she tweeted. Genuine question for the media/law enforcement. why are you calling these armed neo-Nazi groups breaking the law, quote, militias instead of gangs or domestic terrorist groups? Gracias. Thank you for raising that question. Mm. Those mugshots that I posted on my Twitter, and I said, this morning's terrorist, that's who it is. And they are on the same level as any other international act of terrorism against the United States. It's national security, and let's be real. And the president of the United States is enabling this and is allowing this and is telling people, go ahead and use violence to incite chaos and division. That's the reality.
I have thought a lot about how the rest of the world is looking at what's happening to the United States. You know, they must be saying there's a domestic terrorist group within the United States that is attempting to kill its own governor, one of its own governors. You know, I want to shout out this tweet from Keith Boykin because it was just too real. He says, one, Trump calls CNN the enemy of the people. Cesar Sayoc sends pipe bombs to CNN. Two, Trump tweets about anarchists and agitators. Kyle Rittenhouse kills two people in Kenosha. Three, Trump tweets, liberate Michigan. And then men try to kidnap the governor of Michigan. I mean, put in El Paso right there. You know, Trump insults Mexicans and then young white supremacist gets in a car and shoots shoppers on a Saturday morning. Yeah. It is real. Don't be afraid, but be careful. All right. And we say that with all due love and respect. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Uno, dos, tres.
Ending on love, love, yeah. Love, love, which means also we're bringing you another love live show.
Nice.
Aww. It's going to be virtually from
from where?
Our homes.
Wow.
Wow. I might switch rooms.
Oh, wow. Living on the edge.
Yeah, living on the edge. So it's going to be Wednesday, October 14th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Did we have popcorn the last time? I think I'm going to need some popcorn.
Okay.
Our amazing all-star guests who will be joining us are Imara Jones, creator of Trans Lash Media, and Jenny Monet. She's the founder of Indigenously. Where else are you going to have a trans black journalist and an indigenous journalist talking politics right here?
Chilling with a Puerto Rican and a Mexican. Come on.
Oh, yeah, that's
yeah, right. So I can't wait. I mean, this is going to be so exciting. For more info and to RSVP, you can head to bit.ly/ITT from home. And we're going to put a link to that in the show notes.
And remember, dear listener, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us. It really helps. You can listen to In the Thick on Pandora, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. But check this out. Yo, yo, yo. You can now listen to In the Thick on your NPR One app.
What? That's amazing.
Yo, even with all the F-bombs, we're getting some love from NPR. So I'm just like, cool, cool people. We like that. Check us out on the web at inthethick.org. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at InTheThickShow. Like us on Facebook and tell your friends. In the Thick is produced by this amazing team led by Nicole Rothwell, Noor Saudi, and our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow Harsha Nahata, with editorial support from Erica Dilde. Our audio engineers are Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, and Leah Shaw. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Our intern is Sophie Davis. Thanks to Raul Perez for recording me every week. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional Kept and ZZK Records. Dear listener, seriously, we are so thankful that you choose to hit play. Mm. We never take it for granted.
Never.
Every single listen is one that we applaud. And so thank you for being part of the family. Have a great, great weekend, peeps. Bye.
Bye, y'all. Bye, everyone.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.